Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is artist, graphic artist, cartoonist, Chris Ware. And we're talking about his latest book, Rusty Brown. Chris, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you again. I've talked to you several times years ago.
Well, thank you very much. I'm really flattered, and I'm pleased to be invited back.
This is an amazing book, as usual, but I want to confess something to you. I've now, and this happens to no other artist, in anticipation of reading Rusty Brown, I had an incredibly vivid dream that went on throughout the entire night where the dream literally took the form of your work.
That sounds truly horrible. I'm really sorry about that.
It was the best experience I've had dreaming in quite a while, but it's amazing. Now, this Rusty Brown has been a character for how long in your work?
Off and on, I guess for 20 years or longer, actually maybe 25 years. He started out as a joke, kind of throwaway character, which is the way most of my characters begin. And I drew him as sort of what cartoonists call one-shot strips.
Oh, yeah.
For a few years, and then decided to make him sort of the orbital locus of this book about 19 years ago or so.
Well, it's an incredible series of overlapping stories that go even to Mars. Is this the complete collected Rusty Brown, or will there be a part two?
It is the complete half of the first part. So
A minute. It's the half of the first part?
It is the first part. It's exactly half of the book. So the next half will be done, and God knows when. So
because it ended with intermission, and then I kept waiting.
Yeah. Maybe that's a good way to end a book. I don't know, but
Don't do that. Don't do that. The type varies in size so much that I ended up reading a huge section of it with a magnifying glass.
Oh, my God.
No, Chris. What I notice about your work that's I find really fascinating is your work demands attention, and you can't say that of a lot of other comic work. I just sort of breeze through a lot of comic works. With yours, both structurally and a lot of things about it in the storyline, too, you need to pay attention. Is that something that you do purposely?
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, I kind of feel like that's how you sort of have to live life. But I have to say at the outset here, the last thing I would want is for the book to be a painful or difficult or frustrating experience. And I guess two of the chapters and the introduction were printed in very somewhat different form in my regular comic book a few years ago, which I published as a series of low press run hardcovers, and they were printed at exactly the same size, and I don't think I got a single complaint about the size of the text then. It's exactly the same print size, so I guess...
It's just one section. I think it's the section on Mars things are really tiny.
Sorry about that.
Never apologize for your work, Chris. Never, because what it does for me is reading work then becomes an experience, and I mean that in the best sense of the word. And I can't say that for a lot of other works, that I feel like when I'm done with your work, I've had an experience, both in color, line, layout, and I find that fascinating. Reading your work is a different kind of experience visually. That's cool. That's really cool.
Well, I think, I've said this before, but I really kind of feel like people saw better a generation or two or three ago. They looked at the world with a finer resolution of both sight and mind, and I kind of try to aim for that a little bit. And I do,
right.
I mean, you know, you're holding as a reader in comics, especially being a visual language, one holds the book, and one can, move it away or move it closer to one's eyes to see things more finely. And one of the sub themes of the book is the the sort of skein of dots that's used printing comics. And I wanted to get the reader close enough to the page where those dots started to become apparent as like the texture of the printed reality a bit. But I did not want to strain eyesight. But
you're also talking to an older person. So.
Yeah, well, so are you. So I guess maybe that's the problem. I mean, it has the added sort of extra benefit of then I can't read my earlier work as carefully as I used to be able to or as easily. So that's no.
Talk to how would you describe the personality of the young Rusty Brown? I really identified with parts of him.
Well, we probably shared some similar proclivities as children, I guess. So he's kind of a kid in school who's maybe not the most beloved in his mm-hmm. school. In fact, he's regularly picked on and descends into a world of fantasy as a way of sort of making up for that sense of impotency. And he's not the most, by far, he's not the most fully fleshed out character in the book. He's sort of the central cipher around which everybody else orbits. And I wrote him in a way sort of the way I thought of myself as a kid, which was starring in my own kind of TV show in a way. So, the tone of his character is supposed to try to kind of capture that shell that we create for that imaginary sort of heroic shell that some of us create for ourselves as kids. So
I love the
Go ahead.
I love the superhero that he created for himself that he was going to play.
Thank you. Yeah, it's called the Ear Man, which I guess it was because he thinks he's developed super hearing because he can hear his parents screaming at each other from when he's standing outside the house shoveling. So as a kid, I was always looking for some way that I could acquire some superpower, which never, of course, happened. So,
Did you draw comics as a kid?
I did. I didn't really draw comics as much as I just drew pictures of superheroes, just taking like drawing super muscular guys and then kind of putting what I thought my head looked like on top of them and then inventing costumes for them. So, yeah. And all of the good names were taken, you know, so you kind of had to go through this mental list of, you know, what powers are left, you know. I guess there's no one who can really hear really well, or there's no one who has the power of like lukewarm water or anything.
I drew my own set of superheroes called Molecule Men who could change in size, but lived in a little subatomic world. And
that's a great idea.
Yeah, but it's no different than Ear Man, trust me. But I would draw each page would be a panel, and I would go and just draw these panels from some kind of unknown comic that I had.
That's a really good idea.
Rusty also has sort of an erotic fascination with Supergirl.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally, as a kid, get that.
Yeah, I guess we probably share more than we would want to maybe admit to here in a public forum. But I mean that's certainly some of the fascination, at least with maybe our generation, for that stuff, which I presume continues, which is why there's some incarnations of this stuff now on television and in film.
Yeah,
sort of like implicit eros and creepiness of the whole superhero genre. So
I want to talk to you about aesthetics and your work. Aesthetics are always really important to you. The layout is beautifully done always. And there's a tradition in comics that I think goes back to Little Nemo and Slumberland, where the layout and the aesthetics of the whole look of the whole page is critical. And it seems like your work is sort of like the evolution of that to this day. Do you see that?
Yeah, I mean, it's very much a pointed part of it. It's very self-consciously... I approach it that way, but I don't know how to say this. It sounds like I'm contradicting myself, but it's also very unconscious. I try to let that happen on the page using a certain kind of set of principles that I work under. But I don't plan the layouts ahead of time, with the exception of something that might be really obvious, like starting in the center of the page or something like that, rather than the upper left-hand corner. But it's always unplanned. There's no way I could ever plan a composition like
wow.
that. But it's, I mean, this makes me sound crazy, but I really think it in some way reflects the way that we remember space and remember moments in our lives. And I, because we edit and kind of shave things down so that they take on a peculiar kind of beauty in our mm-hmm. own mm-hmm. recollections. And I, you know, like even you mentioned at the beginning of the conversation about dreaming about a comic strip, and you know, you were making that up right there in your own mind. It was your comic strip, really, not mine, but you were creating that. We have this amazing ability to craft and redefine and organize our memories into really complicated compositions that I think in some ways reflect the way that our minds are structured. So I try to allow those kind of already existing structures to find some sort of form on the page without imposing a form on them directly, if that makes any sense at all.
It does, but are there times, because you don't do the layout ahead of time and don't storyboard, is there times where your comic just gets out of control and just goes on forever?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's like everything I do. Like the book, I didn't, you know, I thought I'd be done with the book 10 years ago
oh,
or
God.
Even earlier. So, yeah, everything I do is completely out of control. It's, I have sheafs of notes, almost none of which actually end up going into the stories themselves. It's more of just notes as a way of convincing myself to sit down and start drawing. I think I originally, when I started Jimmy Corrigan many years
yeah,
ago,
I
thought it would be like a 24-page story. So, yes. But
you also use a lot of interesting visual tropes. Like the little keyhole shots that were used in silent movies and early movies a lot are really important. And then you also mm-hmm. you also diagram and do layout things, which I was always fascinated with as a kid. When you drew a spaceship, you would draw mm-hmm. all the little compartments inside and what they did. And that's a huge feature of your book too.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of it's just the way that we think of things, and it's certainly a part of, you know, I guess children's book illustration or something, but it just makes things more, there's something about that sort of comprehension of a house all at once rather than a room by room thing, but trying to see into it like a dollhouse or something, that I think is very both compelling and poetic, but also simply just true, because that's the way we think about it. I mean, you think of the filmmaker Wes Anderson is certainly use of that, or Richard Scarry, the children's book author who I grew up reading, and I try to make that a part of the page itself. I mean, really, that's really what comics are. If you think about it as a grid of images, it's sort of a similar experience. Every single page is sort of like looking into a dollhouse to one degree
that's
or
right.
another. So.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is artist, graphic artist, cartoonist, Chris Ware, and we're talking about his latest published work. It is gorgeous and fascinating. Rusty Brown. Chris, what you are in this in this comic, and first of all, I visually recognized you right away.
Okay.
Talk to me about how it felt to put the adult you in one of your comics, and how you approach that.
Yeah. I've drawn myself in the backgrounds of stories before.
But you're a character. You're a character in here.
Yes. Yeah. I needed a character who was really morally reprehensible and ethically unprincipled. And I thought, well, I was available, and I figured that it was my responsibility, basically, to, you know, if there's going to be a really terrible character, I might as well take up the reins. So
stop right there, Chris. You are not a morally reprehensible. You're a teacher in this, an art teacher. Did you ever teach that grade of art?
I've never taught elementary school. I've never taught high school. I've never taught anything like that. I briefly, for a semester, I taught cartooning at Columbia College in Chicago.
It's not the same.
90s. And I also taught a class at the Art Institute of Chicago about 3 years ago.
The amazing thing is how good you are at teaching the art in Rusty Brown in the classroom. You're actually the classic art teacher in the way that you approach it. Now, if you have sins, the two sins are, one, you're slightly intellectual, pretentious intellectual, where your fellow teachers really have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. This character is a very, very self, he's not very acquainted with himself. He thinks he is, but he's really not, and really kind of full of himself. So it looks like me. It's got my name, but it's not me. So
no getting stoned with the students?
No, that would not be so. I mean, that's not anything I would do now anyway.
I didn't think so. I just
alone solitarily, but certainly not with high school students. So,
I don't think you're an evil character at all. I think you're just like a classic teacher. Maybe on one side.
He's kind of a creep. I mean, I would say, overall.
He has some creepy tendencies, but
yeah.
he doesn't. The only thing was smoking in the backseat with the students, I think, was the most reprehensible thing. And that stuff happens, especially back then. Now, there are so many great things in this book that I just got totally swept up in. One of them was your creation of an entire list of ersatz science fiction magazines from like the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
I loved those titles.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, they were fun to write, actually. So, they're not that hard to write either. I mean, they tend towards the purple, needless to say.
Yeah, but that's like the magazines were. They were really like that.
Yeah. I grew up reading stuff like that I pulled from the shelves of my school library, as well as found myself in bookstores and stuff. And they all seem to have that same sort of overwrought, so I'm not sure exactly. I guess it goes all the way back to the pulp magazines and stuff like that.
Well, I just want to give out some of the titles. So Cosmic Annals. Well, that sounds sort of normal. Salty mm-hmm. Planet Stories is definitely going off to a certain side.
Yeah, these are almost kind of parodic, actually, these titles here. It's kind
famous Hyperbole Quarterly, and my favorite one, Ineffable. I think I would subscribe to Ineffable.
Yeah, well, there were a lot of them. Like, if you look at pictures of newsstands, they're surprising. Like, I still think Argosy is such a strange name for a magazine.
When I was a kid, my older brothers had Argosy, and it was a weird title for a. It was like that was one of the men's magazines, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm, I think so. Yeah, it's no weirder than Tumblr. They were just the websites of their day, So,
but
or vice versa, I guess.
In the middle of that. You actually, and I want to know if this is an original comic or one you got. They would put comics in those magazines that were, I guess you would call droll. And you have one of the comics reproduced in Rusty Brown. That's just, it's sort of funny, but that's it. It's just sort of funny.
Oh, you mean the one panel?
Yeah.
Sort of throwaway. It's like a one, like a, just a cheap one.
But you
managed
to capture the spirit, style, and tenor of those comics that would appear in these magazines because they weren't that great. They weren't that great.
No, that would have been like the lowest level possible publication for an aspiring gag cartoonist to get into, I think, probably. Like, there were plenty of magazines that would publish. Gag cartoonist, but I put that in there as sort of hopefully without sounding too highfalutin, sort of an epistemological joke, because the particular science fiction story is told in comics form in the book, but it's told that way because you're supposedly, or at least the aim is that you're experiencing the writer rereading his own material 20 years after he's written it. So the comic strip represents his mental experience of rereading his own words. And that particular page you're talking about is the very last few lines of the story printed in textual form. And then under that is an actual comic, like a stupid cartoon. So I know that sounds incredibly pretentious, but it's supposed to just be kind of.
I thought it captured the spirit of the publication though. And not only that story, The Seeing Eyed Dogs of Mars, mm-hmm. That was a scary story.
Well, thanks. Well, I wanted to make it good. I mean, the last thing you want to do when you're writing something or working in a so-called genre or writing about a particular, like, I'm not a science fiction writer. I grew up reading science fiction. I don't want to make fun of it too much, if at all. I mean, I have a respect for it, and you have to think through the characters in a way like, you know, this is a character who is really enamored of it. It's the way he's expressing himself and finding his kind of foothold in the adult world or something. So, I mean, they, you know, I made fun of the genre itself, but I didn't want to make fun of him. And it was my responsibility to try to write hopefully an interesting story that would feel like it would be legitimate. So,
talk to me about the use of colors in your mm-hmm. comics. They're so well done. Like when you get to the CI Dogs of Mars, it was all browns and reddish browns. They're really dramatically done throughout your work. Was it tough learning how to use color successfully?
Sort of. I actually learned a lot of it just from looking at a single cover of Raw magazine, Raw number 2, which is a Joost Svart cover, which is, it's a drawing of a cartoon factory, like a sort of an imaginary factory of kind of Chicago style, like businessmen putting together these, panels of, you know, where the actors are sticking their heads through to then photograph and make into comics. Is kind of a silly cover, but it was actually colored by Francoise Mouly, who was the art editor of The New Yorker co-published Raw magazine with Art Spiegelman. And I had that cover on my drawing table for weeks, if not months, and I would look at it under a magnifying glass to find out how she made those colors. Not only she hand cut the color separations, but also her sense of color and to organize that space and to pick brighter colors that sort of work against a more subdued background. She was obviously working, I think, also from Hergé, who's sort of the master colorist of this sort of thing. That's where I've learned most of my stuff from, would be Francoise and Hergé. But it's, the coloring for me is almost completely unconscious. I have a vague idea of what I'm going to do, in the same way that when I'm writing or drawing, and once I start coloring, then it just happens as I go. So it's I want it to have sort of a lushness and a beauty to it that contradicts the tone of the story itself. I do not want it to, except in very particular circumstances, to be in concert with the tone of the story. It should almost always work against it.
Right. There's a set piece, one of the middle sections, that was just, and I think it's been published before, the life story from literally birth on of, I think it's Jason Lint or Jordan Lint.
Both, actually. Yeah, we all kind of pick a name that we prefer more than the name we're given at a certain point, certainly when we're teenagers, but yeah.
What's brilliant about it is as you're reading through Rusty Brown and there are certain change-ups in story and in artwork that are really dramatic. And I when I looked at that first page of that, I had no clue what was going on. And then I realized we're seeing the world as a baby sees it. And
yeah, well,
it was like,
carefully.
And that whole section was just wonderful that you followed it from the beginning to the end. What an incredible thing to do.
Well, thanks. Yeah, that's the conceit is basically that each page represents some sort of condensation of a year of that character's consciousness, as well as the developing nature of consciousness itself. So it starts out basically just as a series of dots and then superimposed image words on top of those dots until they kind of coalesce to form a reality, and then that goes through his entire life, and he lives through
But even the forms 70. Of the body that he observed change from this sort of weird, amorphous, bendy body of his mother, and then details in the frames accrue as he gets older, as he gets more familiar with the world around him. And then the storyline just gets more incredible. People have got to pick up this book just to read that section. That was just amazing. I was just enthralled by that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's certainly, I think probably the most obvious example of this in prose would be Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man by Joyce.
Yes.
Which is a huge inspiration, needless to say. But I wanted to try to do a similar thing in comics, and I didn't want to just illustrate it. I wanted to use the language, the visual language of comics, and have it develop as the character develops as well, and then of course dwindle away as he. I mean, it's pretty obvious how that chapter ends. So.
Now, the overall tone of all the pieces of Rusty Brown, there is a weird ennui, and now I'm sounding like you in the comic. There's an angst. A lot of it has to do both for the adults and Rusty Brown as a kid. It's all the weird little sort of awful things that happen to you, things that don't make you feel good. But it's true for your adult teachers too. I mean, the interesting thing is you get to see the life from both the students and the teacher's point of view of this. And all of them are having struggles, and it's snowing, which here in New England, when the clocks start to go back, everybody gets grim. And I read that just after the clocks went back, you know, turned back again.
Sorry. Wow.
And it's snowing, and you know, a lot of people refer to it as Midwestern, but I grew up in Watertown outside of Boston, and it was a little town, and it was the same feel as in Rusty Brown. That capturing of that feel, that mood, those little situations that go on is really important, and has been you throughout your work. Why is that so important to you?
Well, I grew up with it. I don't know. There's something about that moment of the end of summer, the beginning of fall, the beginning of winter that, for me, I find both very comforting, but also sort of like a preview of, you know, the end of life or something like that. I guess that sounds really corny or something, but I also find it very kind of reassuring and beautiful. So I'm kind of cozy, you know. As a kid, I loved sitting inside and drawing and looking out the window and seeing the snowfall and feeling, you know, comfortable with my mom or my grandparents. I guess sometimes when I sit down to draw, I don't even know what I'm going to do. And I think about a particular moment in my childhood or something, like a mood that I found particularly reassuring or warm or something. And I'll try to get that in the strip. And sometimes I guess it doesn't necessarily come out as reassuring or warm. It might come out as maybe something a little more grim or something, but I certainly don't intend it to. So I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question.
Yeah, you are. We're completely out of time, and we could talk forever, especially about your onomatopoeias, because I started listing all the noises that you came up with. My favorite was the tape dispenser, which went FP, ZP. And it wasn't until I tried to sound it out that I realized that's actually not bad.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, that's kind of, there are sounds of life that one tries to get at, you know, that aren't a particular feature of comics. So sometimes you just have to give in, and some cartoonists will write, sound of tape dispenser.
Right. You know? No. You gotta come up with something like FPZP. I'm gonna start writing that in like letters. you've been listening to WISN. My guest tonight is an artist, graphic artist, cartoonist, Chris Ware. His latest publication, which is just gorgeous, is Rusty Brown. Pick it up. Chris, it's always been a pleasure to talk to you.
I cannot thank you enough. Thank you so much for being such a careful reader and having me on your show. I really appreciate it.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.